The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
This is Colombia Calling. Yes, the Colombia Calling podcast is back this week with episode 290. We're just 10 short of the magical 300 episodes of this tiny niche podcast about Colombia. And this week, we'll be talking to Kaylee Kuczynski, who's from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and she'll be talking to us about her work in extractive sector governance projects, which are financed by the Canadian Ministry of Global Affairs. So very interesting talking to her about best practice for these projects in regions like Antioquia, Meta, and Putumayo. So for those of you who know Colombia, some of the more interesting departments. In fact, I lie, all departments are interesting in Colombia, but certainly very interesting job to be doing at this time in Colombia. And of course, she'll talk to us a little bit about her passions here in Colombia as well. So very cool to hear someone who came here for a little while, went back, formalized her life, and then returned to Colombia to continue working for the country to improve lives and standards of living. So we like that here on Colombia Calling. We like the people who come back to do, you know, good things in our adopted homeland. Because if we all, you know, chip in, we can make a difference. We've got to believe. Anyway, so I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Adrian Alsema, and he'll be giving you the news segment for this week. He'll be talking, yes, from his base in Medellin, and of course, his news will be coming from Columbia Reports. It is a free and independent news outlet. It's columbiareports.com. There is a link to their Patreon campaign. Do throw some cash at it, please. We need to continue to maintain a free press or for an independent voice in English about Colombia. So really consider throwing some cash that way at columbiareports.com. Anyway, I'm going to leave you now, and I'll be back in the third segment talking to Kaylee Kuczynski from Calgary about her work here in Canada. So thank you for listening, and I'll be right back. Bye-bye.
My name is Adrian Alsema, and this is News for Colombia Calling for September 9, 2019. The trial against former President Álvaro Uribe couldn't have started worse for the former president, according to newspaper El Tiempo. The first witness, who was supposed to defend Uribe, reportedly confirmed the Supreme Court's charge he was bribed. The hearings are held behind closed doors, making it impossible to verify the newspaper's claim or receive reliable reports from the courtroom. The former president will be heard on October 8, after which the court can decide whether Uribe ought to await a verdict in trial or in freedom. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has been colluding with Colombian guerrillas in anticipation of a U.S. invasion, according to newspaper Semana. Reported Venezuelan intelligence reports indicate that Caracas has received intelligence from alleged guerrillas, sources from within the Colombian military, and FARC reintegration sites. The leaked documents specify possible military targets in Colombia in the event tensions between the two countries boil over. The 39,000 terrorism support investigations announced by the prosecution in 2015 have so far led to only 8,400 suspects. 700 businessmen and state officials want to submit to the War Crimes Tribunal, and another 4,100 suspects accused of sponsoring paramilitary organization AUC are investigated by the Prosecutor General's office. President Ivan Duque is under increasing international pressure to implement a peace deal agreed with the FARC in 2016. The announcement to rearm of the FARC's former political chief, Ivan Marquez, has increased the pressure to stop frustrating the peace process. Duque has given no indication he is willing to comply with the peace deal. Instead, he has threatened with military action against FARC members accused of abandoning the reintegration process. The United States has vowed to donate an extra $120 million in aid for Venezuelan migrants. The promise followed a claim by Colombia's former minister that his government is $220 million short to attend the 1.4 million Venezuelans estimated to be in his country. Vice President Marta Lucia Ramirez claimed the U.S. funds would go to Colombia, but this was contradicted by the State Department. The extra funds will be spent throughout Latin America, where Venezuelans have sought refuge to escape their country's humanitarian crisis. The visit of the daughter of U.S. President Donald Trump has turned into a domestic public relations disaster for the government. Defense Minister Guillermo Botero was photographed apparently checking out the butt of Ivanka Trump, whose main purpose was to promote the empowerment of women. To add insult to injury, the incident happened at a ceremony in Bogota to commemorate 21 police cadets who were killed in a terrorist attack in January. That's the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
And this is segment 3 of the Colombia Calling podcast, episode 290. And as I said in that first segment, our guest in today's show is Kaylee Kuczynski. She hails from Calgary in Canada, a city with which I am remarkably familiar. My father lived there for many years, and in fact, I worked as a gardener for a bit in Calgary. So there you go, just in case anyone wanted to know a little bit more about my bizarre past. But Kaylee's here in Colombia doing all sorts of interesting things with a company called Agriteam Canada Consulting. They work in Antioquia, Meta, and Putumayo. But previous to that, she was here between 2012 and 2015 teaching English. So something bit her here in Colombia to bring her back. So welcome on Colombia Calling.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be here.
It's a real pleasure to have you here because I like people who have been here a while and then come back. And so, I mean, really, those 3 years, and I think you were with the British Council, those 3 years teaching English were formative to something. You're like, I'm going to go home, formalize my life, get a master's and come back. This is what happened?
Yeah, that's right. I think it's the beginning of my love affair with Colombia, we could call it. I worked, well, initially came to Colombia for love and fell in love with the country and stayed. Started teaching at a high school, actually, and then moved on to the British Council. And teaching was great, but it wasn't what I've always wanted to do. So went back to Calgary, did my master's in public policy, and I'm here working in international development with Agriteam.
Cool. So if you work in international development, well, hang on a second. I just want to pick up on the high school. Was it a bilingual sort of international high school?
Yeah, bilingual with a very keen focus to have connections with Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're interested in, I guess, the way curricular development is done there and inclusivity particularly. So that's how I started my career in Colombia.
Wow. But, you know, and how long were you at the high school?
About a year and a half.
Okay, so long enough. I did a year at school once.
Yeah. It's enough.
In Guatemala. And then I realized it wasn't. But, you know, I enjoyed it, but I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I, you know, being with students and their energy for learning, it is really inspirational and really fun. Mm-hmm. But I've never had more headaches in my life than during sort of lunch recess.
Uh-huh.
It's so noisy. It's
or it's pure exhaustion.
Yeah, it's true. Interestingly enough, during that period of my life, I probably drank more than I ever did as a journalist. So there's but anyway, moving on. Now, so tell me about Agriteam Canada Consulting and what you do in these really fascinating parts of Colombia.
Yeah. So AgriTeam Canada Consulting is probably Canada's leading international development firm. And we implement projects, international development projects all over the world. Here in Colombia, we have a project called Comunica Project. And it's focused on building extractive sector governance in Colombia. So we work to provide international technical assistance to the Colombian government, both at a national level and at a regional level in, as I mentioned, or as you mentioned, in the departments of Putumayo, Meta, and Antioquia.
So sort of bringing its international know-how and, I guess, a bit more environmental responsibility and sort of, this is important. There tends to be the practice here of if it's worth anything, just get it out and sell it at whatever the cost to the local communities, I think. Obviously, you probably can't say anything on that. You can just nod and I can agree with you. But so what kind of extractive industries are you working with?
So primarily mining. We've been working very closely with the National Mining Agency to build what's called Colombia's new cadastre system. And it will be a system that essentially makes information about the sector more transparent and open to the public. So we're working on developing the first stage, which will come live towards the end of this year, and then fully in function as of next year. And we have another a number of other components, which, as you mentioned, I think are key to solving a lot of the problems that exist within the extractive sector, especially around community dialogue and participation. So we're working on eliminating mercury in artisanal gold mining in Antioquia, in Santa Rosa de Osos, and in San Roque, and water monitoring. Bringing more clear and transparent information to communities living in extractive sector areas so that there is a more coherent and productive and better dialogue about how these natural resources are developed in a socially and environmentally responsible way.
Well, you're very much on message. But, okay, I can see all of the benefits of this because, forgive me, listeners, for what I'm about to say. Colombia, its economy is based on extractive industries. And so, like it or not, these things are going to be exploited. These materials, the goods beneath the topsoil here are going to be exploited. So if so, we've got to do it in the best possible manner. But I want to ask, though, is this mercury in artisanal gold mining, I mean, you can pick up mercury in San Andresito, in San Victorino. You can get it pretty much just asking around. I do know there's a way there's a type of machine that would separate
shakers. Shaking tables, think is the correct term. I'm not the technical expert on the project, but one of the components that we've been looking at. So actually Colombia passed a law it came into effect last year, in July of last year, which effectively eliminates mercury in the use of, the use of mercury in artisanal gold mining or in any sort of mining activity. However, local governments don't have the skills or haven't carried out enough of the initiatives for small-scale miners to use these alternatives. So what we're doing is we're working to support these local municipalities in creating an integrated strategy, municipal strategy for the elimination of mercury. And one of those components in San Roque is actually a plant where we're using alternative technologies to mercury to extract gold. And doing some training and capacity development work.
Very, very important because, obviously mercury, we always think of it, that's liquid and so on, but getting into the rivers, but it's in the air. I mean, it's right there. So when you go into these towns like San Roque, or I'm thinking of others like Buritica and other places like
Segovia,
that. Segovia. The contamination is unlike anywhere.
And the biomagnification and accumulation has profound effects on health and environment.
Of course, there's a journalist, a very famous journalist, and I'm going off on a tangent, who's from England, Stephen Ferry, and he did the Violentology book. He also recently, a few years ago, did a book that came out called La Batea. It's about the gold mining, and he's not focusing on illegal, he's focusing on artisanal. And also his helper, sidekick, was a Canadian journalist called Nadia Jost. He's awesome and has done lots of stuff for PBS and so on. But
she ended up going into the brothels in some of these mining towns mm-hmm. To try and ask the ladies that worked there if this mercury actually caused some sort of impotence.
Yeah.
But of course, none of the ladies would possibly admit to it because they're their clientele and they don't want to lose further business. And said, no, miners are the best.
Yeah.
Miners, but I found it very interesting because the question seemed kind of innocuous at the beginning, and then you realize how the knock-on effect could be really quite damaging
yes.
for an industry.
Yeah.
But so you do, and so this is Antioquia, let's say, a lot of the gold. Meta, you've got other projects.
Yeah, Meta, well, primarily it's hydrocarbon extraction that's happening in Meta. And we've had issues in the last few months due to road closure is getting there, so we've had to put some of our activities on hold at the moment.
With the landslides?
Because of the landslides, yeah.
It's just, I mean, that road
is
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's beautiful,
yeah.
Well, but yeah. It's very precarious.
Yeah. I mean, you've driven it. I mean, I've been a driver going down, and it's like, I never want to do this again.
Yeah,
I now obviously after that disaster with the Chihara Bridge or anything,
yeah.
Like, I don't want to cross bridges, and there's this one stretch, like 28 bridges,
yeah.
And it's just like,
I just focus on the beauty of the landscape.
if I'm going over the edge, at least it's with a good view.
Yeah.
Oh, my word. And then in Putumayo, which is a department I unfortunately and regrettably still do not know.
Yeah.
What do you do down there? Is it water?
Putumayo, we're doing some water monitoring activities.
Yeah.
We've developed an 8-module course where we're training environmental leaders on water monitoring. And parallelly, we're working with the Regional Autonomous Corporation, so
mm-hmm.
the local environmental authority in Putumayo, to effectively monitor quality and quantity of water and if there is, in fact, an impact from extractive sector development. That's one of the activities. Another activity is focused on local economic development. So we're
mm-hmm.
supporting small-scale coffee producers,
wow.
Cacao producers, and chontaduro, which is a delicious,
I think
Colombian fruit.
Yeah, yeah.
Not everybody likes it, but
it's
a bit chalky. to formalize
mm.
and to increase their economic income by selling these products.
Sort of, yeah, again, economic stability,
yeah.
less fragility in that kind of market. I can understand. Are you in Mocoa when you were there?
Yeah, Mocoa, Villagarzón, and Orito.
Oh, Orito right out there.
Yeah.
And Mocoa, I mean, how is it recovering from that disaster some years ago?
I think there's probably, still some significant challenges that the municipality is facing infrastructure-wise. There's lots of buildings that have yet to be completed and lots of complaints from what I've heard, at least from civil society, in terms
mm.
of how funds have been used in redevelopment and in getting people back on their feet again. But it's a process.
It's challenging, and these outer-lying departments, of course, tend to be more sort of out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm.
I would also venture that because of the background, more I would say sort of more indigenous and colonos,
mm-hmm.
it's also more forgotten on that level from Bogota.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. Also, I mean, these I can't remember what they're called right now, but these sort of pop-up neighborhoods that have sort of.
Mm.
I guess was initially a reintegration center for previous members of the FARC, but after the landslide in Mocoa, from what I understand, many people have gone and set up their houses or their places of living to within those reintegration centers.
Wow, that I did not know. That's
mm-hmm.
really interesting, and. Those reintegrations, some of them are actually really well built.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was in the one in Guaviare, one of the ones in Guaviare some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was impressive.
Yeah.
But of course, at that point, President Santos was saying that they were not permanent. They were,
temporary.
Only temporary. There was nothing temporary about it
at all.
They were putting drains in. That was
yeah.
more than a lot of towns in the region.
Yeah. And it gets to a point where it's almost a social conflict, no?
Mm-hmm.
And there are, I guess, a lot of these centers are becoming almost mini municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
And there's becomes a demand on the governor's office to recognize them as societies, as local communities. So,
as you are, sort of on this governance project and Canadian Ministry of Global Affairs and your consulting team, are you well received in these towns, let's say in Segovia or wherever, San Roque?
Initially, I would say no. Yeah. There's a lot of, I think, hesitation, especially from local civil society around extractive sector and what that really means. Mm-hmm. But part of the project's intention is precisely that, is to make some clarifications or clarify and contribute to the overall good governance within the sector. So actually one experience in Putumayo, we started work there about 2 years ago. And I remember in the first community meeting that we did, we had a guy stand up, a guy by the name of Robinson, who has now become a very good friend of ours, stood up and said, you know, we're either going to do hydrocarbon extraction or water. There's nothing else. You know, we're not interested in sitting down and talking about this. We're not interested in engaging with the private sector or with the local authority. And actually in July, I was there again, and the same person, he's now taken our water monitoring course, or community-based water monitoring course, and has become very much involved in monitoring local watersheds. He stood up and said, you know, we realize that we can do this, that we can, you know, we can sit down in harmony and have a conversation about what the development of our territory is going to look like. And I think a lot of that is due to initiatives that perhaps came out of the Peace Accords, the PDET process, local development with I guess it's the first sort of decentralized public policy ground up. Building approach that the government has taken, so it's fascinating. It's
very positive.
It is.
I mean, that's certainly local people. You're taking this opportunity with both hands. And this guy Robinson, you say, so he's what you would say now, be a social or community leader in this term. So now he's. I hate to say it, but what's the issue? I'm sure when you've been in some of these outer lying areas. There's a lot of the talk about the issues with the social and community leaders. Mm-hmm. Is it more than 600 now that have been killed?
Yeah.
Since the peace accord was signed, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that must put you at ease a little bit as well.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a special dispensation for good or for bad being foreigners. We're kind of left to our devices, but... Mm-hmm. You know, these people live on this precarious situation that if they tread on someone's feet, you know, the wrong people. But so nice to hear that a guy, an individual, could take this by the hand. But I like it. I like the challenge that he set up. It's either this or this, and we're not doing anything else, and we're not interested. Now he's your friend. He sounds like he's someone who definitely can get the community to rally round.
Yeah.
He sounds like he's an individual that people listen to.
Yes. Engaged, empowered, and informed.
I like that.
It's been a huge, at least qualitatively, it's been a huge accomplishment for the project. So.
Now, I don't know a lot of these places you go to, I mean, these little towns, but I have to ask, because I know listeners out there will be interested, because I know that a lot of people have worked in international or overseas aid or consulting. But so you end up in these towns. At the beginning, let's say they don't have the best sort of slant to you. They're not so interested or a bit skeptical. Mm-hmm. Do you stay in local people's homes, or are there little sort of residences or hotels that aren't rent by the hour for miners and stuff? Because I'm just imagining Wild West in some of these places.
No, well, for the most part, we're within the urban limits. We do make visits to Vereas, to more remote areas. But for the most part, there is at least a very small hotel.
Okay.
We have considered there's a community center in Villa Garzón when we travel to Putumayo. And sometimes we bring people from the community and from Ordito and Mocoa. And we've thought about staying there, but we haven't had the chance to. And I actually would quite like to, because it's out sort of well removed from any traffic. And it's very quiet and peaceful.
Because in small towns, the motorcycles and the noise is amazing. And like the cantina.
And the music, the ballenato music.
Costain, your friend of my wife, said he's from Cartagena. He's like, why do people in Bogota always complain about the loud music? Why do my neighbors always complain about the loud music? Why didn't they go to sleep? And you're like, well, that's precisely the issue.
Yes.
We can't. But I stayed in a tiny place in San Juan de Losada, so on the border between Caquetá and Meta, so yeah. We were doing some studies about the peace process.
Mm-hmm.
I came back with the worst bed bugs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, you just want to weep. The pustuling.
the quantity of weird viruses that I've had hand, mouth, and foot disease.
You've had hand, mouth, and foot?
Adults should not get.
No, my little brother had that when he was like 5, a long, long time ago, and that was a scandal.
Yeah,
got foot and mouth.
It's awful.
That's like cattle disease.
It's very painful.
What? How does that manifest? I don't even know.
I mean, it's not worth talking about.
Is it really horrible?
Yeah, it's like uncomfortable pain so much that I could barely walk.
Really?
On my feet, hands, and mouth. I would say it's the equivalent of like chicken pox, but only like very well concentrated.
It's like all around your mouth?
In the mouth. Yeah, yeah.
Wow, this is like a horror movie. So you've had, this is fascinating. You've had hand, foot, and mouth. What else have you had?
This year,
check the boxes here.
No, luckily I haven't had anything too serious. No yellow fever, no Zika or anything like that.
Dengue?
Dengue, no.
Oh, I've had that twice.
Okay, all
malaria?
Right. Nope.
I've had that a few
times.
Okay,
yeah. You're much worse off then, Richard.
Have you had, I've had typhoid, not typhoid. Was it typhoid? Not typhoid, yeah. No, I don't know. What do you get from diphtheria? That's what I had.
Oh, diphtheria.
Diphtheria. I may have had typhoid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I did.
Oh, God.
From bad food.
Okay.
Yeah, as well. But I'm trying to stay well now.
Try to avoid it. Yeah.
I really don't want yellow fever or cholera. Those are the ones I'm looking for now.
Oh, no.
But fascinating. Truly great. So what I like most is, you go in and then... What is the deal then, that of course they've got this skepticism towards you. I digress, but then it was fun. they are skeptical, let's say, towards you. Have there ever been any risks of like social unrest? Because these guys, now that there's this movement and it has been widely publicized, because we're in this age of immediate news on WhatsApp and everything else and Facebook Live and... People can broadcast their demonstration at 1 minute, and it's on our TV screens. It's everywhere, and in these gold mining towns where they have, or in other mining towns where they've come up and they don't want this industry. Have you encountered any of these sort of things?
Yeah, I think it happens all the time, and especially in places like Segovia Remedios and Buritica. Antioquia, where there is that really strong sense of not wanting any extractive development activity happening. Mm-hmm. Our project, luckily, hasn't been too highly affected by those sorts of sensations, but we have had to rearrange our geographical areas of focus based on where there was a willingness and an openness amongst the local population to work and to receive information and to start to dialogue about these sorts of things. So we initially were going to work in Segovia and Remedios, and we chose to work in other municipalities in Antioquia just because of that.
Well, you have to. And of course, it's an international entity and they have to look after their own. Mm-hmm. You don't need these issues. You don't need to be putting their employees at risk, potential risk. And then, of course, Buritica, I don't know how many weeks ago, it was a couple of people killed and so on.
Yeah, a couple of engineers and geologists,
But they weren't foreign, though, were they?
No, but they were working for Continental Gold, which is a Canadian company. The Embassy of Canada and Agri Team are both, they both have safety first and foremost in all of their implementation activities. So it is, security is at the top of our sort of list of things. And
so very important. Mm-hmm. I mean, so very important. And, excuse my English for saying it, the recent news in Colombia has really done damage to Colombia's image overseas. Mm-hmm. Jesús Santrich and Iván Márquez saying that they're returning, the new FARC, in inverted commas. The last thing we need as well, an international consultant getting into some tricky situation to further undermine. But let's not take away from the absolute disaster and unreasonable conditions that local Colombians will find themselves working in.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's just, you know, what we see as foreigners is one level, but what Colombians have is a whole other level altogether.
Yeah.
And we are very privileged, of course, in this society.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I mean, it sounds to me that you're here for the long run. I mean, you came back in 2017. We're now towards the end of 2019.
Yes.
What's the plan? Are you sticking it out? Are you going to become the director of AgriTeam Canada in Colombia?
If we had more work here, absolutely. AgriTeam is a fabulous company to work for. Colombia is, as I mentioned, it's become my love affair. It's a fascinating time to be here, I think, in terms of political and economic and social development. Mm. And I think there's really great things to be done.
There's so much to be done. And, you know, you've got your master's in public policy. This knowledge needs to be applied in areas, you know, teach it to the local people so that they can take it and apply it in there, rather than us always sending another consultant. It was Paul Theroux who wrote about that in one of his books Through Africa, and his dismay at 20 or 30 years later seeing the same practice occurring.
Yeah.
No, it's about empowering these local communities. It sounds to me that if you're putting people through these like watershed courses or water management courses, then you are giving people like Robinson the opportunity to
skills.
Lead their community.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually my role on the project is precisely in that area, capacity development.
Cool.
So AgriTeam runs a 4-stage capacity development model, which really looks to put local governments, host governments, or local communities in the driver's seat of development initiatives. And the role of the international consultant or the development practitioner then becomes a guide, and it becomes a supporting and more of a coaching and mentorship role as new capacities are either acquired. In Colombia, there's great capacity that already exists, and it's a matter of developing and positing it within sort of that right space to reach those targets and those objectives.
And of course, you know, a willing workforce, an educated younger generation coming through with a desire to improve Colombia.
Yes.
I really see it. You know, it's almost 13 years here, but you really see it. Let's say, more international generation coming through, even from regions such as Putumayo, far off Meta, Antioquia, of course, where there's a different story. Now, let's change tack, because I'm going to say thank you for that part. This is almost like a two-section conversation with you, because I know that you have further interest here in Colombia. We'll just take it a little bit. We'll lighten it up a bit. You've been talking shop.
Yes.
And now it's time to talk about, you know, ocio, your enjoyment here. And I know that your family are listening, and so I'll just say to them now, I apologize that I am a Calgary Flames fan, and I know that you are all Edmonton Oilers fans, but so be it. Alberta rules. but no, that's I'm just making that, I'm putting the, drawing the line beneath the extractive industry. And now let's talk about, this is a cycling mad country, and it's not just because of the, you know, the national heroes now like Nairo Quintana and Egan Bernal. Even prior to that, El Zipa, back in the 50s or what have you, it's always been. Now, you are heavily involved in this.
I am, luckily and very fortunately, able to be involved in the cycling community, particularly in Bogota, but I've traveled with my bike to a number of different departments as well.
Cool. But people now come on like cycling holidays to Colombia as well. I'd say, okay, I'll cycle down to Meta because but Antioquia, that sounds to me like a real challenge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And geographically, I think like there's top athletes, top cyclists that come here to train. I mean, geographically, the hills that are here just don't exist in so many other parts of the world. I mean, you can get 1,000 to 2,000 meter climbs in a day. The biggest ride that I've done, and we were planning to go to Letras, which is an 80 kilometer climb from, I think the elevation gain is over 3,000 meters, but you get into Paramo, into that ecosystem, this very particular ecosystem that exists in Colombia and only about 4 other countries of the world. But those sorts of elevation gains, you just can't find anywhere else.
And 80 kilometers, forgive me for sounding like an idiot. And did you do that on a day?
No, an 80 okay, kilometer good, climb God. Like that on a day, no.
thank God, I was really worried for a second there.
Yes. But we will do every Sunday, Saturday or Sunday, I'll be out doing between 100 and 200K.
And you do the Los Patios?
Yeah,
and
Patios is like a morning routine for me.
It's a morning routine. It's like 14 kilometers, right?
No, it's six.
Six?
6.3.
Yeah, but it's just straight up.
It's vertical. It's a 500 meter gain.
It's a vertical climb.
Yeah.
Admiration. I'm just going to cycle to work. That's all I'm planning.
That's how I started, Richard. Okay. You just wait.
I'm a lot older than you now.
The cycling fever.
I actually used to love it. And if I were more enthusiastic, I would probably do something similar. So, but if you're doing 150 or something in a day, are you going out past Zipaquirá, doing a big circuit around Cajica and all these areas?
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing is, the weekend, everybody's out. So you've got a degree of security as well.
Because yes.
I think even the bus drivers have learned that they need to leave you alone.
Yeah. And there's actually, I mean, even this week, as you were saying, this immediate news, there was a campaign this week of cyclists in Bogota talking about respect for cyclists and the 1.5 meter limit. And they went out with like a meter stick on their backs that actually measured, and you could visually see the distance that drivers needed to be at from a cyclist in order to respect them. And now, I mean, that's of course not the reality here in Bogota.
You had that little girl, a young girl.
Yeah, I can't remember her name. Boyacá. She was a professional, on her way to become a professional cyclist. Yeah.
Very sad.
Yeah, it is. It's awful.
When you've got a community a country that's so enthralled with cycling and it's, I would say, put football to one side, it's the next thing.
But
everybody loves it here, and everybody has an opinion. And, I've never seen a country maybe outside of France or Italy, which has always got the cycling on the television, even in the town. There needs to be a greater understanding between the traffic and the cyclists.
Yeah.
We can't just sit and your regular guy sit and enjoy his poker in the Tienda del Barrio watching the cycling and then drive like a maniac on his truck afterwards. You know, there's this weird duplicity of the situation. No, but you cycle like, I mean, you're a pro. This goes beyond a hobby. This is a passion.
Yeah, cycling has become my thing.
Your thing. And triathlons?
Triathlons are new in the last year, yeah. So met while cycling in Subachoque town, a town, I guess, just west of... west of... It's beautiful, though. It's a beautiful little town. Just west of Bogota. Met a triathlon team, a guy by the name of Juan Carlos Gutierrez. He's now become my coach. And he's a fantastically interesting guy who held the title of the half marathon of Medellin for 12 years.
My word.
Qualified for the 2012 London Olympics. And I've been training with them for the last year. Did my first, my first triathlon in Bogota, the second in San Andres, which was incredible.
We
swam from Johnny Key to the island.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was the best, probably the best swim I've ever done. You're swimming over manta rays and tropical fish and all sorts of things. But triathlon's become the new thing.
Cool. I mean, you sound just unreasonably healthy. so have you listened to a couple of the former podcasts that we've had with... about the legend of El Dorado, the cycling, the mountain, multi-stage mountain biking race. You're not interested in doing that? I know you're more
mountain biking, not so much.
No? I'm sure they'd let you do like a road section of it if you got in touch. Yeah. Said no. See, Richard from Columbia Calling said, and then I think Dave and Brian would have to sit up and go, okay, we'll give you a segment or something.
Yes,
but it does sound cool, the multi-stage mountain biking race. But do you get involved then in the road cycling races at all?
Actually, just as you were saying about how much cycling culture has grown here, Grand Fondos have developed at rates. I don't think any other country in the world would have would have seen this sort of development. But you've got like Peter Sagan is coming to do a Gran Fondo in November in Barranquilla. Mm. Of course, Rigoberto Urán has his Gran Fondos every year. Nairo now is organizing them. So I would say probably 2 or 3 or 4 times a month, you've got a choice of doing a Gran Fondo.
Amazing.
So yeah, it's and in different parts, different and diverse parts of the country, right?
Yeah.
Flat, mountainous, whatever you like.
Yeah.
And the landscapes, I mean, for my fellow cyclists out there, if you would like a cycling holiday, Colombia is number one.
Yeah, don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, and also take the the news on the front page with a real pinch of salt, because Colombia has existed and Colombians have cycled, and you know, without problems, you know.
Yes.
that's the truth of these things. Yeah. You won't be sent off into a red zone to cycle.
No,
you'll be sent into an area of astounding natural beauty to
yes.
cycle, breathtaking vistas, wonderful
and
ways,
and physical challenges.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. I'm just going to go downhill. But very cool indeed. So I think you're here for the long run. I mean, you can't possibly take a Canadian winter again.
No, God. No. Yeah, I've been. My mum's not going to enjoy hearing this. She's sitting, I'm sure, at the lake right now. But winter is, yeah, just a dreadful thought.
Oh, the lake house is what people do in Canada, isn't it?
Like, yes,
the lake
houses. Yes.
So it must be in Alberta somewhere.
Yeah, Pigeon Lake.
I don't know Pigeon Lake, I'm afraid.
It's beautiful. It's
I'm
also,
sure
it's, speaking of natural beauty, it's also, yeah. We're very fortunate in Canada to have all sorts of wonderful landscapes.
It is a spectacular country, but that weather is just, I mean, it's,
yeah. The minus 30, the, yeah,
minus
it's 30. Hard.
I walked outside when I was there in the minus 35 or something, down where it's pedestrianized downtown,
mm-hmm.
just to try it.
Along the Bow River.
Yeah, and my corneas froze.
Oh, God.
And my corneas, and I must have been getting hypothermia because someone just pulled me into a shop.
Oh, God.
They pulled me into a shop and sat me down and gave me a tea, and I was like, people are so nice. So anyway, that said, I'm not going to winter again. But listen, let me just say, Kaylee Kuczynski, thank you so much for sharing, you know, the sensible side of your life, and then the, you know, the passion of your cycling and your road cycling and so on. It's been a real pleasure to
thank
talk
you,
to you,
Richard.
Now have to look after my son, as you can all hear
yes.
in the background. But it's been excellent.
No, it's been a pleasure to connect, and I've been a fan. I mentioned to you, I've been a fan of Columbia Calling for some time, and it's been great. Great to connect with you in person and participate. And
thank you.
And I guess if there's anybody out there that needs information or tips on cycling in Colombia or would like to hear more about our project, please don't hesitate to call.
Definitely get in touch, or get in touch with me, and I'll pass on the message to Kaylee. And of course, you know, come to Colombia. I mean,
yes.
We return. Come to Colombia. This is what's going to help the country, you know, turn these dark corners. And you mentioned the word transparency earlier
mm-hmm.
on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the greatest challenges that Colombia has, is transparency. And if we can pull it out into the light a little bit more, then
yes.
this is a good thing.
Absolutely.
So thank you to Kaylee Kuczynski on this episode 290, a landmark episode, 290, just 10 away from 300. It's been really great talking to her. Her enthusiasm, you know, for sports and also for the work that she does here, you know, trying to help and improve lives and business practices here in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, thank you again to Adrian Alsema of Colombia Reports for his new segment. That is the Independent Press. So do throw some cash at them through their Patreon campaign. I've been Richard McCall. This is Colombia Calling. I like getting your emails on ColombiaCalling@gmail.com. Of course, we're on Twitter @ColombiaCalling and Facebook. And we'll be back next week. I've got someone lined up who has just finished his doctorate, I believe, at the University of London on medicinal plants in Colombia. So we're going to be talking about that, and especially the Putumayo and hallucinogenic plants, I believe. But more about that next week. So thank you for tuning in, and goodbye.